Welcome to Alaska Edition, a weekly public affairs program produced by Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated in the studios of KAKM. The host and moderator for Alaska Edition is Michael Carey.
Thank you for joining us. Our guests are Paul Jenkins of the Anchorage Daily Planet, Tim Bradner of the Alaska Journal of Commerce, and from Fairbanks, Dermot Cole, columnist of the Fairbanks Daily Newsminer. We'll be spending a lot of time in Fairbanks in the show as we have three trials going on up there, or two of them are continuing. One has been finished. We have a verdict that are of great importance politically to the state of Alaska. And we're going to come down here, and Paul's going to give us a look at the snowstorm and what can be done about it, if anything, or are public officials doing enough in response to cleaning it up. And Tim Bradner will take us to Juneau, where we'll have a look at what the legislature is about to do as they pick up their activities and open their session on Tuesday. Let's go right to you, Tim. The legislature does convene on Tuesday. What do you expect on the budget, and what do you expect on the major resource issues?
Michael, before we get to that, though, something that's really exciting, which has just happened, is the Russian tanker has arrived at Nome with the Coast Guard cutter Healy after cutting through about 300 miles of ice.
This is more or less noon Friday.
Yeah, this is noon. This is a quite exciting deal. This is a case where Nome was cut off from getting all of its fuel because of a winter storm that blocked its last barge delivery. So the local fuel distributor, Citisuck Corporation, contracted with an Alaskan company, Vitus Marine. They went out and found a Russian tanker. They got the Coast Guard lined up, and they rammed through several hundred miles of 2 and 3 foot thick ice, and they made the delivery. So now they have to get the fuel safely ashore, and they have to get the ships back out of there. So the Coast Guard says, this mission is only half over. We have to get those boats out.
And,
but it's quite exciting.
Did the whole town show up on the beach? Is it one of those classic Nome shows, or do we know yet?
We don't know, but the Coast Guard is asking people to stay away from the area because they want to safely. They have to lay about a mile of, possibly up to a mile of hose, to because the tanker can't get but within about, you know, some distance from shore because of the ice conditions.
And is there an estimate of how long it will take to unload the fuel?
I've heard a couple, 3 days.
Oh, really? So this is this is not filling your, putting a tiger in your tank. This is a big job.
Anyway, it's quite a quite an achievement. We have so many problems here that we talk about a lot, and every now and then something goes well.
We talk
like
about
this.
Some things that never end.
Yeah.
This apparently has a beginning, a middle, and a happy ending.
And apparently it's turning out well, so that's good news. And it was Alaska company that put this thing together.
Let's turn to Juneau. Thank you.
Legislature starts Tuesday. The big ticket items on the agenda will be oil taxes. Everybody's talking about that. The budget, of course, is something the legislature has to deal with. Capital budget, another big capital budget this year. On oil taxes, the governor's bill is in the Senate. The Senate has to, feels under a lot of pressure to make a response. There will probably be proposals coming back from the Senate, variations of the bill that the governor passed the House last year. We don't know what's going to happen. House Speaker Mike Chenault feels something is likely to pass this spring, but we don't know what. We don't know whether it's enough.
Okay.
Anyway.
Paul, what about gas and gas lines?
I think gas will get a lot of attention. They're going to have to decide how to tax gas. It's wrapped up in a GEO. They tax gas the same way they tax oil. That's going to have to be separated, and it's going to have to be decided how to do that. We've got to decide if there's enough gas on the North Slope to move south on an in-state pipeline. There was talk recently led by the legislators of building our own gas line and not waiting for anybody else. This was right before the big three showed up, and I would have given anything to be a fly on the wall. They said, for God's sake, don't build a little gas line. We want to build a big gas line. But what'll turn out there, I don't know. There's going to be a GEA itself. You've got GEA has a provision to go south. Whether they'll go with that or not, who knows? Are they going to go with their own line going to somewhere else? Who knows? But I think gas will draw a lot of attention during this session.
Tim, can we expect a building full of oil company lobbyists and company representatives?
There will be a lot of action on oil taxes in Juneau, so I suspect there's going to be a lot of oil company folks around. So a lot of attention will be paid to it.
And sometimes that is very episodic, depending on when bills or legislation is taken up.
Yeah, and a big issue like this, Michael, sometimes crowds out other
yeah,
issues.
Yeah, that's true too.
So that could be a problem for somebody else working on all the other legislation that has to get done.
Yeah, that's where the minority members in particular are complaining that they're not getting a hearing. We've heard that before, that's for sure. Dermot, federal judge Sharon Gleason, then she was a state judge, I should note, issued a ruling on the latest Trans-Alaska Pipeline oil tax case. You read the entire ruling, and Judge Gleason had a lot to say on a variety of important subjects. Please tell us what you found in more than 200 pages of your leisurely reading.
Well, Mike, this is an important ruling, and in what amounts to the largest ongoing property tax case in Alaska's history. Unlike the valuation of your house or my house, putting a dollar value on the Trans-West Pipeline is an extremely complicated matter. The oil companies, and particularly the municipalities, have been battling with the state in recent years over what, you know, dollar value to put on the pipeline. The oil companies believe it should be in the range of $1 billion. Judge Gleason's latest decision puts it at $9 billion. You know, there's a huge gap there, and part of this decision rides on a conclusion about just how economic and for how long the oil supplies in Alaska will last. Judge Gleason decided that the pipeline could be operated until 2065. The oil companies have made an argument that because of various limitations, there should be a much sooner date for the end point.
Dermot, I can't see you, but I'm looking at your photo here. I just want to interrupt you for a second. Judge Gleason made this her decision, or came to these conclusions about the longevity of the pipeline based on company documents, right?
That's right, Mike. In essence, there are two competing sets of research. One that's done by BP is forecasting a much longer life for the pipeline, whereas the work done for Alyeska is predicting that the pipeline cannot operate below 300,000 barrels a day. BP is saying it can operate in the 100,000 barrel a day range. The importance of that is, if the pipeline can operate at a lower number, it can last longer. That makes it more valuable in terms of property tax. The oil companies are arguing that the end point is going to come sooner, meaning they should have a lower property tax bill.
Okay, thank you. Tim, you have any thoughts here about Judge Gleason's ruling in the state court?
The only discussion that I've heard about it is that it, as a property tax issue, it dealt mainly with that. But the implications of the how long the pipeline lasts, really, from a mechanical point of view, is what gets lost in this discussion is that when we get down to throughput rates of 300,000 barrels a day, we are in big trouble as a state. So forgetting the property tax issue and the valuation of the pipeline.
I mean economically or?
Exactly. Well, financially. I mean, 300,000 barrels a day in terms of state royalty and tax revenue to the state puts us in very dire situations. So, you know, the mechanical capability of the pipeline or even economically to operate for lower than 300,000 barrels a day, it may be of importance to oil producers on the North Slope, but as far as the state's concerned, we get down to those ranges of production, we're in deep trouble financially.
And what, for those who can't remember, how many barrels, what's the throughput today?
It's about 600,000 barrels.
So it'll be about half then.
Right.
Okay. Do you want to add anything here before we go on?
What I'm left with after reading this is there seems to be two different assumptions here. One is a mechanical and safety assumption. Yes, it can go this far. And the other one, as you point out, is money. At some point, when it stops being economic, and it'll stop being economic long before 100,000 barrels a day, they're going to have to do something with it. This is a case about property taxes in 2006. We've got 7, 8, 9, and 10 yet. There'll be many more trials as this goes on. Two or three different views of what the oil companies want us to say, well, it's based on the value of the process of moving the oil. The state wants to say, no, it's the oil. I don't know how it'll work out, but I know this. At 100,000 barrels a day, a lot of people will be leaving Alaska with U-Hauls behind them.
Dermot, you want to have the last word here? Any thoughts?
Yes, I don't disagree with with anything that Paul or Tim just said, but I think the key thing here is why are two different scenarios being put forward, and why was the state unaware of the low-flow scenario and the numbers that the oil company, that BP in particular, is using with the Securities and Exchange Commission?
Well, those are good questions.
Okay, maybe I'm sure this is a case where a judge's ruling becomes quickly a political document. There's no question about that. This is going to be read very closely all over Juneau by people who are interested in these questions. But we need to move along. A federal judge in Washington, D.C., Judge Kessler, tells the Justice Department bluntly that it must explain why its refusal to make the records of two investigations of Congressman Don Young public is okay. This is a suit filed by the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington. They want to see the records of the investigation, and the judge says, well, let's proceed with this. Paul, she surprised many people, it seemed to me, with this ruling, and tell us more.
This revolves around a $10 million earmark for a highway project in Florida. A contributor in that area had given Don Young a lot of money, apparently, for his campaign. And what the judge ruled was, I guess the citizens group wanted to know what the Justice Department found in its investigation of this. The Justice Department said, no, that will invade the congressman's privacy. We're not going to release it. The judge ruled that the public interest in the case, not only in what Young did, but what the federal agencies that investigated him did, outweighs Young's right to privacy. Right. And from that point on, this becomes a sticky wicket for everyone, because we now have Don Young wondering if his privacy is going to be looked at or invaded. The Justice Department has to decide whether it will appeal and fight this in court. And in the judge's case, this is a fairly substantial ruling in other cases of the sort.
And Congressman, the judge didn't say that Congressman Young has no right to privacy.
No.
They said that it had to be reviewed, and there may be considerable amounts where we get into our old friend, redacted.
It'll be a piecemeal review by the Justice Department, and there'll be a fight over every document probably along the way. But it's a significant ruling.
Dermot Cole, are we finally going to get the facts on Coconut Road?
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I'm not sure we will or not. After this ruling, the Justice Department has to prepare an index of all the files, and then the Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics is going to mount its argument as to why they should be released. So we have kind of a ways to go yet on this. I mean, if these files are released, this will be the biggest issue in his campaign probably.
Okay, if he gets an opponent, there's that to consider. Once again, I'm Michael Carey here with Dermot Cole, Paul Jenkins, and Tim Bradner. Paul, record snows clogged the streets of Anchorage and many other cities in South Central Alaska and many highways. We see letters to the editor and radio talk, dare I say it, where some citizens think, you know, our snow removal people are not getting the job done. What's a fair estimation of how we've been doing?
A fair estimation? I'm unsure.
I hope you're up to this.
I don't think I am. Arizona's looking better and better, I know that. On the one hand, the mayor of Anchorage and the officialdom says, well, it's a record snowfall. We're doing the best we can. We're keeping up, and as fast as we can do it, it plugs up again. Although I have to tell you, I've seen few plows, and the roads are atrocious. Maybe they will catch up. Maybe they'll be better in a day or two. But for right now, I think the complainers have a leg to stand on, and I think those who are doing their best just to try to keep up, they've got my respect, because they've got their hands full.
And the logic of this is, if it continues snowing, we're just going to get
more. We're going to get more and more, and Arizona looks better and better.
Okay, Tim. Unfortunately, we didn't have you here to offer your thoughts on Governor Parnell's meeting with the three owners of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, which occurred in Anchorage last week, and it was quite remarkable. It was very unusual. I can't recall ever having them, all three of them, the chief executives, these big corporations in the same room here in Anchorage, and unless maybe it was at one of the 1969 bidding or something, like the lease sale. Give us your perspective as somebody who's had numerous years following the oil industry and knows how these people think.
Well, the governor called the three to ask them to come and meet with him. His goal was to try to forge, as he calls it, alignment, meaning that the three companies are working together on gas. They met privately with the governor last Thursday. It was a private meeting. I was told there was nobody else. You know, the three CEOs had no handlers with them. The governor had one other person in the room. We don't know who that is. What was discussed was not really released, other than it was said that it was a lot about natural gas, and there was a lot of discussion about Point Thompson, which is an outstanding issue that has to get resolved, that lawsuit over the status of those leases. A little bit of talk about the oil tax and ACES, but not really so much. I'm told there's no linkage with ACES about this, but the oil tax and the gas tax, as Paul mentioned earlier, is something that has to get resolved before anything happens. A little amusing thing, we reporters were trying to follow a social luncheon that the three CEOs and the governor had with legislators. It was over at the Dynina Center, and the press was not allowed. So we all had to stand outside while legislators and community leaders, you know, people, nonprofits and everybody else went into the room, and we were not allowed in. All these security guards were around. But as it happened,
let me ask you something, if I might. How many people approximately were in that room?
Oh, it must have been at least 100, over 100 or so.
And they're thinking that the version of what happened in that room is not going to get out?
Well, and I'm also told that what was actually said during that was rather bland and not really, I mean, not really much. It was more of a social thing, as it was described to be. But people were sort of cracking jokes. I'm told the governor made remarks about we're going to have an open and transparent process. And then people said, well, why did you kick the press out? But as it turned out, I think it turned out very well, because as a reporter covering that sort of thing, right after the meeting, the BP and the Conoco folks, they were a little embarrassed about this. So they trotted the CEOs right outside to meet with us, and it was very productive, because right then those guys were very clear of what they had talked to or at least the general subjects they talked to the governor about, and they were very clear that they felt that LNG looks a lot better than a gas pipeline, which is the first time that you have people of that high up saying that. And they all three, interestingly, also said that they feel they need to work through the existing AGEA process, which is at least a framework they can work together.
Tim, one thing that surprised me about this, we know many examples of legislators meeting with and governors meeting with important corporate leaders. I can't remember, though, when they would include members of the community who weren't elected to anything, and some other members of the community don't get to get in. That part seems, can you remember anything like that?
Well, I don't, Michael, but I'm not sure really. This was a private meeting.
I mean, I should hold my outrage for something else. Yeah.
The oil companies, I mean, they paid. This was a social lunch. They paid for it. They have the right to kick out whoever they want to kick out. So, and I mean, it all ended up well. We got much better, more effective comments from the CEOs than I think what was said inside.
Well, the CEOs are very experienced people. They have to be. You don't get that far without a lot of experience dealing with the press.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I think that nothing concrete was agreed on, but the fact that they were here and that you don't have people of that caliber and that altitude coming to Alaska without something, you know, happening. I don't think the dirt's going to start soon, but I think there's going to be a serious look at LNG.
Let's get back to Fairbanks to Dermot Cole. Dermot, the reapportionment case proceeds in the Fairbanks courtroom in state court. You've been following it, and please give us an update on what we know now about the various complaints that have been filed in Fairbanks and what we might infer from how the trial's been going.
Well, the case wrapped up well. It ended for the week on Friday. It's going to continue next week, at least through Monday and Tuesday, the attorney said. There was testimony both alleging that the reapportionment plan is unconstitutional and that it unfairly divides puts a piece of Fairbanks into a district that extends all the way to the West Coast. and there was testimony on behalf of the board and board members defending the plan. And I guess I'm not this is obviously headed to the Supreme Court, so this is maybe a step along the way. There are also arguments about the Senate pairings. As you know, the redistricting board sets out 40 House districts, and then two have to be combined to create a Senate district. And there are claims coming from the plaintiffs in this case that this is unfairly targets Democrats.
Now, my understanding is the witnesses have included the plaintiffs, John Torgerson, who was the chairman of the board, Jim Holm, who was a former legislator and a member of the board, and there's been a certain amount of wrangling about what the federal Voters' Rights Act requires in the way of protection of minorities. Can you tell us a little about that?
Well, the complying with both the federal voting requirements and the state constitution is a difficult proposition. I think everybody who's ever watched these would acknowledge that. That doesn't mean there's not plenty of room for argument, however. And the Federal Voting Rights Act basically says that the Native influence districts and districts that are controlled by Natives cannot be reduced. And so the challenge every 10 years is to come up with a plan that meets that standard and also meets the state constitutional standards that districts are compact and they're
socioeconomically. Is that what you're looking for, buddy?
You took the words right out of my mouth, Mike. anyway, it's very difficult to do this, which is why all these plans always end up in court. The experts are also testifying. They're going to have some probably mind-numbing discussion next week on how the numbers break down. And, one thing that strikes me is that there's a huge element of politics in this, but the people involved in it are usually quick to say that politics has nothing to do with it. But, maybe
and,
you guys
and
can
for
resolve
the, for
that.
Le, for members of the legislature, there is no court case more important than this one. This is one they all follow very closely because it's their future.
Especially if you're a legislator who's going to be put in a new district where you're going to face another incumbent.
Okay, thank you. Paul, police here in Anchorage cracked down on drunkenness in bars, and surprise, it turns out to be a violation to be drunk in a bar.
Who knew? It's incredible. Apparently there are laws on the book that prohibit people from being drunk in licensed premises, and they've decided they put a couple undercover agents into these bars, and if you fall off your stool or throw your money on the counter or exhibit some form of being drunk, they in fact will cite you, or they can cite the server. And I think the message here is to the servers, not so much the drunken clientele, of which I've never been one myself. But it was
you've heard about it, however.
I've read about it extensively. Yeah. To me, it's arguing the police's point. It's let's get them in the bars and straighten this out so we don't have drunken people leaving the bars and getting
into trouble.
And the
industry, of course, is saying
and the industry says
police
the police are
control.
Being overzealous. They're in there just having their way with customers and servers, and it's not fair. So somewhere in the middle, the truth is, I'm not sure where, but it did shock me. It was 4 or 5 days of talk radio. I mean, very heated talk radio.
And what were the callers saying?
Basically, we've got better things to do with our police than...
Did the word fascist get used?
Nazi, fascist, the pigs, you name it, they got it all. They think that they're better used for police than going into bars where surprise people get drunk. So, I don't know.
Okay.
The truth is out there somewhere.
Okay. Dermot, let's return to Fairbanks. Joe Miller sues the Fairbanks North Star Borough for releasing what he calls his confidential personnel files during the U.S. Senate campaign a couple of years ago. That trial is proceeding once again in state court. Please tell us what you've observed and what you've heard from the courtroom.
Well, Mike, it really isn't in court just yet, but Miller is taking depositions.
That's right. Thanks for the correction.
of borough employees, past and present. And it does seem a bit like he's on a fishing expedition. His assertion is that borough employees illegally handled his personnel files and distributed information to the press or and to others, and that sort of harmed him during his campaign for the U.S. Senate. It's not really clear to me what he expects to get out of this, but it may depend on what the depositions turn up. Interesting enough, the Newsminer has been able to witness his depositions because the Newsminer is a party to the case. So we've been reporting on the depositions.
Through Jeff Richardson, your reporter, right?
Right, yes. And I guess he intends to show up at the rest of them.
Has Miller been there in the room during the depositions?
Yeah, he was taking notes there. And I guess we'll see what happens.
Okay, we'll have to see what happens because we're out of time. Thank you very much for joining us on Alaska Edition, and we'll see you right here next week.
If you have questions or comments about the program, you can email Alaska Edition at alaskaedition@alaskapublic.org or write us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. Alaska Edition is a production of KAKM. The opinions expressed are those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent those of KSKA, KAKM, the licensee, or their underwriters.